Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Happy Friday, everyone. Welcome to the Jake and Stacy Show. I am Jake Heaps. Our captain, Stacy Ross, is out on vacation, taking a little time off, well-deserved. So yours truly will be the captain of the show today, and I am pleased to be joined by the one, the only, the legend, the Groz. Groz, how you doing?
Jake, doing terrific, buddy. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it is going to be. It is going to be fun. I'm excited for this show, and I couldn't think of anybody better to have on with me to talk about this monumental day that was last night. Now, last night certainly wasn't the storybook debut we would all love to have seen for Jared Kelnick and Logan Gilbert, but that's okay. Last night was special, not because of the expectation of the performance that Kelnick or Gilbert would have in it, but because it was the mark of the Mariners signaling they believe they are close to consistently winning games and turning this organization from a perpetual bottom-of-the-league club into a legitimate contender. They are signaling that they are ready to move on to the next phase. It was fun to watch two of the future cornerstones of this club last night. And Groz, just your overall thoughts as to the buildup, the excitement heading into that game, and what you saw.
Yeah, as you said, it was fun. It's rare that you'd have two of your top prospects that you're really counting on into the future debuting in the same game, except that, you know, maybe at the start of the season, but during the season it was a little bit rare to have it that way. You, of course, and I know we're going to have Ryan Roland Smith on later, and he made a good point yesterday that, you know, you want to see everyone do good in the first day, but it's also, there's nothing wrong with struggling in your first game because you're going to struggle as a rookie in baseball. And the sooner you can get it out of the way, the better, because as you just pointed out, you know, one game doesn't matter. You don't read anything into one game in baseball. It goes far beyond that. But, you know, this is not bringing up just some guys from the farm where you're hoping to fill a gap or whatnot. This is bringing up two guys who you expect to be building blocks, a part of what you're planning to do in the future. And that's what makes those two guys coming up different, and will make, you know, when some other guys come up during the year different, because they're guys that they have nurtured to the organization. They're guys that are expected to help in the long run, not in the short run. Those are the guys you're going to be seeing this year, and we'll see, you know, we'll see how long Logan Gilbert stays up. You know, he probably is of the two, maybe here a little too soon. I mean, I can put it in good football terms for you, Jake. It's a matter of those guys not having much practice. And we know how football players love practice, especially organized practice. And if you don't have a lot of practice, you know, and in the case of both of them, that they don't have a whole lot. And really, in the case of Logan Gilbert, just the five innings in AAA this year, his only venture into that level of baseball. You know, we'll see how long he stays up. He could be a candidate to go back down. But then again, he really did. He hung in there. You know, he's throwing fastballs for the most part, as to be expected. The Indians, team of professional hitters, realized what was going on and got their knocks in, but he still struck out four and looked good. And Kelnick, swinging on the first pitch of the game, causing a great play in the outfield, nearly had a great result, and then did struggle a little bit. He'll be fine. He did not look like he was overwhelmed in any way, shape, or form. He looked like a guy who was ready. He looked bad, and Plesac made everyone look bad last night for about seven innings on one of his changeups when he struck him out the second time up. But otherwise, there was a lot to like for both sides of it. And again, it's just the difference between just bringing up guys who you hope are part of what you're going to do versus guys, hey, these are the guys that we're going to be moving forward with. And it's exciting for that case.
Yeah, it is exciting. And you talk about those struggles and those learning moments. And one of the things that this organization loved about Jared Kelnick was his confidence, but also his advanced approach to the plate and his ability to learn and process and to regroup and adjust. And that's something that, look, you're going to go up to the big league level. There's going to be a major adjustment from what you were seeing in AAA to what you're seeing now at the major league level. And there's going to be adjustments, and we'll see how that process goes. But Groz, I'm curious to get your thoughts on Kelnick and the fact that he was there at, right at the top of the order. I mean, to me, when I looked at him getting that nod of being at the top of the order, it gave me a lot of confidence that they are bringing this kid up not only to say, hey, we want you up, we think you're a talented player, you might be you're the most talented left fielder that we have at the moment. No, we think that you can be a special impact player for us right at the beginning, and we'll see if he remains there at the top of the order, but I think that that spoke a lot to where they think his development is, that they think he is ready for the show, not just to come up and see what happens. But do you think they made the right decision, Graz, in bringing him up and putting him at the top of the order, or do you think they would have been better off easing him into the lineup?
Far be it from me to tell Scott Servais and those guys what to do, but I was a little surprised that they had him batting first. I mean, you had Haniger had been fairly successful batting first. I mean, you could have put him in there at second. You also could have put him in down in the bottom of your lineup where you've had a lot of trouble, and you can still do things like that. You're not married to him in any one position. I mean, you can see that, you know, the way he attacks the game, you know, it was kind of exciting to watch. But, you know, I'm not so sure that that'll be his final spot this year. I wouldn't be surprised if they moved him around a little bit. I mean, the point being that he was definitely going to play. There's no question that he's going to play. And, you know, it may have put a little bit of extra pressure on him, may not have, I'm not sure. But I probably, if it was up to me, I probably would have batted him, if not second, a little bit further down in the lineup, just to maybe take a little bit of the pressure off the first night jitters or whatnot. But you talked about it. He's a really confident kid. And has a lot of that, brings a lot of that to the plate and a lot of that to the game, and you know, has kind of an attacking attitude, and it's where he might fit long term for you. So I was a little surprised, and like you, I'll wait and see if he winds up staying there or not. But I do think he's up here to stay for a while.
Well, you mentioned that first plate appearance, and when he swung at that first pitch strike high up in the zone, I mean, I thought, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? This guy's actually going to do it. He's going to hit it yard on his first pitch, ends up pulling it foul. But here, just to the mindset, the aggressive mindset, the mindset that he was not scared walking into his first debut, here's Kelnick with a nice little soundbite here in cut number three.
If he throws me a cookie, I got to be ready to hit it. So when I step in the box, I got to be ready to hit right away.
How about that, Graz? He throws you a cookie.
He throws me a cookie. Sounds like a big leaguer already, man. Sounds like a big leaguer already.
Absolutely, and I'm sure that's going to be the first of many great sound bites that we'll play from Jared Kelnick. He just seems to have that confidence, and you know, I love that mentality from him as a hitter. But you also mentioned the learning experience that Logan Gilbert went through. There, mm-hmm. Although, look, he got you know, 4 runs off of 5 hits. If you're watching that performance and just looking at that stat line, you're going, oh my gosh, too young. We'll see what this process is like. But when I watched the game, Graz, I saw a young pitcher who has dominant stuff, who has exciting stuff, who has a variety of different pitches, who just needs to learn how to pitch at the big league level. And I saw him make adjustments along the way towards the end. And you look at that final inning, you look at the final, you know, the third and the fourth inning, he started going on a run there, striking out 3-4 batters in a row, and you know, it may seem simple, but in cut number one, Logan Gilbert talking about, hey, there's some things I learned last night.
Obviously, made some mistakes, and they make you pay for it. Definitely don't get away with all the mistakes that maybe I did coming up, and of course, just falling behind in counts, stuff like that, they're usually going to make you pay for it, so... when I did leave pitches out over the middle of the plate, more often than not, they took advantage of it.
And they certainly did. And that was one of the mistakes that I saw from Logan Gilbert last night. Now, you know, the profile on him was that he was a primarily a heavy fastball pitcher, Graz, in the minors. But the one thing that I loved about him is he threw strikes. He threw 71 pitches, 52 of them were for strikes. He gave up home runs. He gave up hits. He came right back as he was a first pitch strike kind of kid last night. But as you saw it go on, he started putting in more of his off-speed stuff, his curveball, his slider. Both of those pitches were nasty and got guys chasing last night. So, Graz, how much of this process is it, or how much of a learning curve is this going to be for him in your anticipation as you watched him last night?
Well, it's colossal, and it would be for any young player. The learning curve to go to the majors, especially as a starting pitcher, is just it's colossal. You know, most of the pitches you threw in the minors to get guys out don't get guys out of the big league, and you got to do things like you got to throw your breaking stuff when you're 3-1 in a count, which very few young guys are comfortable doing. And look, I think if all things were equal, and the Mariners hadn't suffered the injuries that they had suffered on that pitching staff and they'd lost a bunch of guys, they probably would have rathered wait on Logan Gilbert. I think Kelenic was coming up early no matter what, the way the offense was playing. They needed a bat, and their plan was to bring him up anyway, and I thought he was going to come up for sure. I think Gilbert was a little bit more of, boy, it's a necessity. We're really short some arms here. And, you know, he seems like a smart kid who can learn on the way. We'll see if he can. It's a tremendous learning curve, because when you adjust, major league hitters adjust, and you do not get away with throwing things in, you know, down the middle. It just doesn't matter. I mean, you see, everyone in that league sees 97, 98, 99 miles an hour. So a 96 mile an hour fastball isn't impressing anyone. So, you know, it's about location, and it's about learning to pitch, which is definitely an art, and everyone who's ever tried it in the big leagues know that it's a lot more than just rearing back and firing. And we'll watch him develop, we'll watch him learn, and we'll see those things happen, and the confidence in using his breaking balls at certain points in the count. You know, not being, you know, he was sort of a heavy fastball, was what we had heard, and he threw a lot of them up in the zone last night, which was probably excitement to a degree. So, you know, I'll be interested in seeing how long he stays number one, and, you know, how quick he is to make the adjustments to the major league hitters that he's going to face.
Yeah, I hope he stays for the rest of the season. I hope that is the plan for Logan Gilbert and Jared Kelenic and Graz. As you said, look, there's no guarantee that he stays up if he struggles. But my hope and my belief is that Logan Gilbert will make those adjustments, that they believe that not only talent-wise, but we talk about Jared Kelenic's confident mental makeup, that Logan Gilbert is a tireless worker, he's a cerebral guy, and that he will be able to make the adjustments to be able to be an effective pitcher at the big league level. This is a process. This is not a one-game event. We cannot make a snapshot judgment on these kids in one game. Guess what? They've got another game tonight and another game after that. And we need to watch this thing play out and watch how they develop as they move forward. And I think that that's going to be the exciting aspect of the rest of this season. I don't know about you, Graz, but even with the abysmal performance from the lineup last night, even with some of the struggles of Logan Gilbert, it was still much watched TV for me, because I just wanted to see what those young kids would do next.
Oh, definitely. And as they bring up more of those young guys, that's going to be the case, because like we were saying earlier, this is now the team. I mean, I was talking to Paul Gallant yesterday, and he was talking about, when should we start seeing results, you know, from the young players. And I said, look, I mean, I would think if we're not in August, and I'm not talking about them being in first place or anything, but if we're not in August saying, I see it. I see why they like this guy. I see why they like this guy. I see what they saw here. You know, we should see it this year. They should bring up most of their young players before the year is over. Not all, but most of the young players that they're kind of counting on for the future. And you know, you got four or five of them here right now. So I would expect that you should start seeing at least what the Mariners saw in them before this year is out. And it'll be interesting to see if they can live up to that. And there's a little pressure on the organization to do that this year. And we'll see if they can do it. But I do think that you know, later on by August, you know, we want to be seeing, yep, that's, I see why he's here. I see why he's here. I see why he's here. And you're getting very excited about the future, and that happens.
No doubt, Graz. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Stay tuned to 710 ESPN Seattle all day long as we're giving away a pair of Mariners tickets every hour until 6 p.m. Listen all day for the cue to call, and you could win a pair of tickets to the May 19th Mariner game at T-Mobile Park. Don't forget, fully vaccinated sections are available at T-Mobile Park this upcoming homestand. Find tickets and prices and more information about special offers for this vaccinated section at mariners.com/vaccination. All right, DJ, let's get to three questions brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
All right, well, the NFC West looks like it's once again gearing up to be the toughest division in the NFL. it almost happened last season, but then the 49ers injuries caught up to them with them finishing with a 6-10 record. But what percent chance do you give for the NFC West having four playoff teams?
Four playoff teams, DJ. Man, that is tough right there, because here's the reality. The NFC West, although they hold, I believe, four of the better teams in the entire NFC, they're going to beat up on each other. And they are going to lower their own records down because of the bloodbath that it will be within their own division. And it'll make the job of teams like Dallas and Green Bay and Chicago or the Minnesota Vikings, Washington football team, it makes their job a lot easier to make the playoffs with their schedules being a lot easier down the road. So although I think that those four teams belong in the playoffs, percentage-wise, I'm going to say 25%. What do you think, Russ?
I think 10%. I think it's unlikely you'll see all four of them. It's all kinds of things can happen, including injuries during the season. But you're right. They will, if they're that good, they will be beating up on each other, and that'll cost them in some other non-conference games. So wouldn't shock me to see three, but four would definitely be a surprise.
Number two.
So how concerned should Mariners fans be with the overall results from Kelenic and Gilbert this season?
This season, I think it all depends on plate appearances and how much they are actually going to get. Both these guys are called up here in May. Graz just talked about that he's not even sure that Gilbert is going to remain up with the big league club for the entire year. We'll see how that plays out. I would love for that to be the case, and I think that is the plan for Kelenic and Gilbert to remain with the big league club for the remainder of the season. But I think that you have to take this with a grain of salt. And you want to see development. You want to see adjustments. You want to see those things happen with these two guys. But we've seen players come from the get-go and see immediate impact. And we've seen players also struggle in year one. And in year two, they really turn it around. One of the more famous Mariners, Alex Rodriguez, he didn't come out into the show and light the world on fire his rookie season. It was really his second season that he became the Alex Rodriguez that we know and remember from the good old days, right? So I think that this is all going to be a learning process. And I would say that if these two guys aren't consistently performing by the month of August and September, I believe that there should be a little bit of concern. But overall, I'm not going to be crushing these guys if they're not, you know, lighting the stage on fire. But I do want to see consistent play. I want to see them be average. I want to see them be, you know, for Kelenic, for example, I want to see him be around the 240 to 260 range at the lowest. I think that that would be a good first year for him. And Gilbert, as I said before, learning from his mistakes, adjusting his pitches, locating his pitches more, and being more confident with his breaking balls.
I'm kind of looking at an old-time player that you may have heard of, Willie Mays. I thought you may have. He called up his first year in May in 1951, went hitless in his first 12 at-bats, then hit a home run off Warren Spahn. Then went hitless in his next 12 at-bats and was 1 for 24, was going to get dropped from the team back into the minors. And instead they dropped him in the batting order, and he stayed the rest of the way and wound up hitting .275 with 20 home runs and 68 RBIs on his way to an amazing career. So, you know, I threw those numbers out yesterday. What would you call a success for Logan Gilbert? For Jared Kelenic in his first season. And if he can throw up some numbers like that, 20 home runs, he's going to play at about 120 games. I think you call it a big success. So I think he's a little bit further along, and I do think that they're expecting to see some results from him. And I would think, you know, we pay too much attention to batting average because he's going to struggle with that. He's going to strike out some because that's the game nowadays. But if he shows some power, I think that's what you're looking to see.
Number three.
All right. Well, rookie minicamp starts today for the Seahawks. Which rookie are we most intrigued to see or hear about during this camp?
Well, it might be the most obvious pick, but I think it stands out. It's second-round pick Dwayne Eskridge. I want to see how this kid performs and what the reviews are going to be about him, because you don't select him in the second round with other needs that you were looking at without believing that he can make a big impact to your offense, that he can bring another dynamic to your offense to make you more explosive, and not to ease him in the process like we talked about with some of these Mariner prospects, Graz, but that he can from day one be able to be an immediate impact player. That's what I want to hear coming from rookie minicamp.
Agreed. 100%. You know, he's the one guy that you know of, and not being sure of the non-roster guys that they're going to fit in, but the one guy you know as a rookie who will have the opportunity to be a factor on the team. So yeah, I'm with you, Jake. He's the one guy I want to hear what they have to say about him.
Now, I'll throw out one more other guy just real quick. He isn't a rookie, DJ, so it's cheating a little bit, but it's Daryl Taylor. Daryl Taylor is going to be performing in rookie minicamp over the weekend because he didn't play, so he qualifies as a guy that can participate. So I'll be very curious to hear what they have to say, because this will be the first live practice action that they have been able to get. He did a little bit during the year, but not much. So this will be a big moment for Daryl Taylor. All right, what did Mike Saul see from Logan Gilbert and Jared Kelnick in their Mariners debut? Find out next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
You know him, you love him, well, maybe. We got Mike Salk joining us, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Salk.
Hey, buddy.
How you doing, buddy?
Fantastic. You're driving this ship today, huh?
I am. I am captain. There might be some turbulence.
Yeah.
There might be some turbulence from time to time, but just know that the plane is going to land. We will land the plane.
Get you some power steering or something. Make sure this thing goes okay.
But and to guide me along the way, I've got an amazing co-pilot in the Graz.
David?
He's here to guide me.
Hello, Michael.
Hello David.
Good to talk to you. I'm here to guide Jake from my terrifying seat in the back. Imagine me curled up in a ball. Going, sure, it's going fine, Look out, yeah. Look out.
Salk, we had a monumental day yesterday. We had Jared Kelnick and Logan Gilbert. We got to see their debut. What were your overall thoughts and impressions of the day?
I got to tell you, yesterday was a good day in general. Anytime you get 70 plus in May and the CDC announces that we could go maskless and we start hearing about everything opening up at the end of June, and I might have snuck out to play golf late afternoon, and you get Jordan Spieth on top of the leaderboard, and you get Kelnick and Gilbert all debuting on the same day, that's a pretty good day here in Seattle, at least for me. Now, bummer, obviously, the Kelnick went 0-for-4. Bummer that Gilbert got tagged with a loss and, you know, had a tough inning in there. But, look, baseball does not turn on what happens day one. This isn't basketball where you bring in LeBron James and day one he goes, you know, for 30-10. It's just not like that. Kelnick is going to take his lumps. Personally, as I said, I probably wouldn't have even brought him up yet. But he sure seems to be ready. He's doing what he did. He accomplished what he needed to in the minor leagues. And now it's going to take some time for him to adjust to the major leagues. Tonight he can go and hit two home runs. We'll wait and see. But sitting around and saying and judging any baseball player on one night, probably not. Probably an exercise in futility, to be honest.
Yeah, I think of the two of them, Gilbert probably was the one who was brought up a little too soon. And that was because they needed to. I mean, they literally ran out of arms. But Kelnick just, he's got... some of the stuff you're looking for, it seems already, Michael. He's got the swagger. He doesn't seem overmatched by anything. I mean, his post-game quote was great. If they're throwing me a cookie, I got to hit it.
Mm-hmm.
He just feels like a major leaguer already.
He does, right? He talks like one. He's got the swag. Look, this kid's great. I mean, you talk to people around the game, and I've sent some texts out like, man, I hope this kid works out. And the answer is always, yeah, he's gonna. Because he's got some of that Bryce Harper. He's got some of that Acuna. He's got just that flair for the dramatic. He's built like a you-know-what. I mean, he's a really strong, well-built, young baseball player with a great sense for this game. Look, yesterday didn't go great. Thankfully, they didn't get no hit. Quite frankly, they almost pulled the whole thing out in the ninth, which really would have been a tremendous, unbelievable capper for that day. It's too bad. I know how many people were still watching, but the 1-1 pitch to Terenz that was called a strike at the bottom corner of the zone changed the whole game. And it's so frustrating. Something like, it wasn't like the worst call you've ever seen. Maybe it sort of caught the little bit of the bottom part of the plate. But if he calls that a ball and now it's 2-1 on Terenz and the second guy is having control problems and now he's in the driver's seat instead of being able to throw him a curveball on 1-2, I think there's a decent chance the Mariners win that game yesterday. And today is just a worldwide party today in Seattle.
Well, it definitely could be. Now, when you look at Logan Gilbert, Salk, to me, you know, you look at the stat line, you look at, you know, four runs off five hits, gave up a couple homers, and that's definitely not what you would love to see from his debut. But overall, when you watch his stuff, I mean, it's exciting. You could see the talent. He started working in his off-speed pitches a little bit more. He got some guys really chasing. I mean, what did you make of Gilbert's performance?
Yeah, I think the person I listened to afterwards was Terry Francona. Did you hear any of Tito's comments afterwards? I covered Tito for a while, so I have like a Tito translator in my head, and when I heard him talk about the arm angle and how he was coming at guys almost from what under their feet, I think he said, like that's telling, right? That's a guy who's seen it, and I remember like I've seen him for years. When he sees a guy on the other side that he thinks is going to be something, he kind of has a way of talking about them, and I think I heard that last night from Terry Francona. So, yeah, look, Gilbert was not great yesterday. That's not him at his best. But you can absolutely see why he has the potential to be, if not an ace, certainly a number two or three starter who can be really effective for a playoff team.
Looking forward the next couple of months, what are the guys you expect to see trickling up to the major league level?
Well, I'm excited that at some point we may get to see Trammell again. Like, I don't you want to see what happens next with that story? We saw him in spring training and saw what he's capable of. He's a beautiful swing. I told this story a while ago, but Graz, you'll appreciate it. My dad, who thinks that if you don't play for the Red Sox or in the AL East, you don't exist, takes one look at Taylor Trammell and is like, who's that? I was like, that's Trammell. That's really a swing. I mean, like, he just instantly gravitated to Trammell, and you can see why. When he's got it going, he's a really powerful, beautiful lefty swing, the whole deal, and then he was overmatched, clearly, for the last month or so at the big league level. So what happens when he goes down to AAA? Can he make the adjustments he's going to need to now that he knows what it's going to take to be successful in the big leagues? And will we see him come back maybe in another month or 2 months and be a little bit more prepared for the major league game? I think that's a possibility. Cal Raleigh's the other one, obviously. The catching position has really been a mess so far, certainly hitting the ball for the Mariners. And if Raleigh can...
You can say that again.
Yeah, you got the catching position's really been kind of a mess for the Mariners so far.
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I got you.
Thank you.
You know, Raleigh's probably the other guy who is, if he's not 100% ready, he's close, and switch hitter, if I'm not mistaken, as well. So, you know, can he be your young Jason Varitek that you gave away all those years ago? Come up, switch hit, you know, be that guy that becomes some of the nucleus for some of these big-time players that you all have coming up together. I think those are probably the two that I'll have my eyes on.
Now, Salk, I'm actually kind of curious to hear, I'm surprised to hear you say that about Taylor Trammell, just to the thought that, you know, hey, if you bring him up again, Kelnick's up, you've got Kyle Lewis, you got Mitch Haniger out there, where does he fit? Where does he continue to keep getting reps? Because that's an important aspect.
Well, yeah.
How do you think that would work?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of ways that can work. One, you know, if all three of those guys are going to make it the rest of the year without a stint on the IL, that would be a treat. But I don't think that I'm going to take that bet. I'm going to guess that at some point, history has told me, one of those three guys will find their way to the injured list. So that's one. Two, look, if Evan White continues to struggle at the level he has, and I know it's picked it up a little bit recently, but... You know, you could send him down. You can move Ty France to your first base spot. Now you have the DH spot open. You can rotate that DH spot between your three outfielders. I mean, there's a lot of ways you can do it without needing to play Dylan Moore or Sam Haggerty in the outfield.
You know, I know what you're saying about White, and especially, you know, having a lack of a bat at first base. But, geez, I think of the play that you're talking about, random plays in the game. The play that he made, I think it was in the eighth inning, just going ranging to his right and making the perfect play and getting the ball, and then the perfect delivery to the pitcher covering. Defensively, he is just so good that. You know, it's you're almost willing. I mean, it's you got to be hitting 200, I suppose.
Right. Yes,
but
you
if
do.
He's hitting 200,
okay, but you do.
If he's hitting 200. I'm willing to live with him.
He's hitting like 118. Like at some point,
I know you can't hit a buck and a half. You can't
do better than that. I legitimately wondered the other day watching. Maybe this is the dumbest idea of all time, but Do you think that they'd be better off with him at second and Ty France at first?
Has he played second?
I don't know, but does Ty France? I mean, like, France is not a second baseman by any stretch of the imagination. Do you think that White would play second base better than France would?
Yeah, but I don't think he'd play it as good as France could play first base. And it's good, certainly not as good as he plays first base. I mean, he just is a wizard over there. He's preventing runs over there that you're not even thinking about during the course of a game. But he's got to, you're just going to be as patient as you can be because he's just that good defensively. But you're right. Yeah. I mean, he's got
it obviously doesn't work because White's a lefty. So I understand that he's not going to be playing second base. But just the idea of Waters, like, man, he's such an athlete out there and what he can do. You know, fielding the ball and just his athleticism. Yeah, it got me thinking. I know it's not possible. Thank you.
Salk, we always appreciate you. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
All right, guys. Good stuff. See you. See you, Groz.
Thanks, Michael. See you.
We all know the NFC West is the toughest division in football, but which side of the ball for the Seahawks has the most to prove? That's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, Graz, I want to do a little exercise with you because there is an interesting discussion to be had here about the Seahawks and particularly which side of the ball has the most to prove in 2021. Now, Graz, we're gonna split this up today or in this segment. I wanna highlight the offense in particular. I wanna go through the offense and what we both think about what is gonna happen with this offense and why they have the most to prove. And the reason why I wanna highlight because the offense in particular, and come back to the defense, because I think there's a strong argument to be made for both sides of the ball to have the most to prove. And with the offense going out to a blistering start, their first 5 weeks of the season, really the first 8 weeks of the season, they remained the top offense in the NFL. And we all know the story of what happened in the second half of the season. Mm-hmm. They really tapered off in their production. Russell Wilson's play tapers off. The explosive plays taper off. And they lose a game against the Rams that was a really jarring loss in the wild card round. And a big part of that is the offense, yet again, struggled to perform at a high level. So, Graz, why in your mind would the offense have the most to prove in 2021?
Well, I don't think there's any question they have the most to prove, and it's you kind of pretty much illustrated it right there because of the fall off they had in the second half of the season, and most specifically the fact that Russell Wilson, for the first time in his career, made a lot of noise about protection, made a lot of noise about not liking how things were going, and that's something that was brand new. So Russell alone speaking out about not liking a circumstance to me makes the offense the huge instant focal point. And boy, I think of that poor new offensive coordinator who was really under the gun to produce something that Russell's going to be happy with. He's got nothing to do with what's happened in the past, but he's the one who's got to live with what's happened in the past. So I think the fact that Russell went on the record in a way that he hasn't before really, really puts the pressure on the offense to show that they are the offense we saw the first half of the year, not the second half of the year. Their big money player is obviously Russell Wilson. That's where the money is being spent, and that's where you've got to be at your best. So they were for a while. They teased us for a while. They showed what they can do. This time they've got to do it for the entire year. So I think it's the offense.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, you talk about the you know, Russell Wilson speaking up, and anytime you have your high-profile superstar going out of their way, so to speak, or stepping out of the norm, and that's for Russell Wilson, that's what happened. He stepped out of the norm of what he usually does or how he usually handles his business and publicly makes a statement, a strong statement about where he would like to see changes made, how he would like to see them made, and overall that puts a spotlight on you, right? That puts a spotlight on his performance. And mm-hmm. ironically enough, statistically, he had one of the best seasons in his entire career, 40 touchdown passes, 13 interceptions.
They went 12-4.
Over 500 yards rushing. They went 12-4. You're exactly right. They won the division. I mean, there was a lot of great things that did happen, but the second half of the season was definitely not up to expectations. And you have to prove that with the new addition of Gabe Jackson, with the new change in offensive coordinator, which was a big wholesale change for Pete Carroll. It was outside of his norm of the way that he likes to hire his offensive coordinators, the background of which his offensive coordinators have had in the past. And so you're going out and trying to play a different style of offense than what you've played in the past, being committed to that, trying to be more explosive all year long. And Graz, mm-hmm. it's not going to get any easier. We both highlight the second half of the season. And why was the second half of the season the way it was? Well, you played against better defensive fronts, better defensive lines, better defenses overall, mm-hmm. and that was a big part of the equation. Well, guess what, Graz? In 2021, the defenses that they will play, get this, and I'm including both the times they played the defenses that within their own division, but 11 out of the 17 games are defenses that were in the top 15 last year, and 10 or more or 10 or less were defenses that were in the top five. So you got the 49ers, you've got the Saints, you've got the Rams, and so you look at those defenses. Washington, who you have again, was also a top five defense. So I mean, you're gonna have to prove it in a big way this next year.
Yeah, no question about it. So the defense, the pressure is not going to, it's not off them a little bit, but, you know, they did have the strong second half, and you know, it's funny, though, they've got some of their own issues to worry about as well, but, you know, offensively is how this team is going to rise or fall. It's not a team right now that's built around defense. You expect the defense to be good, but they're built around the offense. They're built around Russell Wilson being a premier player and having one of the best offenses in the league, and that's how it's going to have to be for them to be successful.
Well, that was proven absolutely last year. I mean, you talk about the turnaround that they had statistically, defensively, Graz, you point that out. I mean, they were one of the best defenses statistically last year in the second half of the season, but when it came to crunch time, when it came to playoff time, when it came to playing playoff caliber teams, you see your offense sputter and you lose games. Ultimately, this team is going to be relying on this offense to be able to get it to a Super Bowl. You have to be able to have high-level play from your quarterback and from your playmakers and from your offensive line overall and get Chris Carson going in the running game to make that happen. You know, Graz, outside of Russell Wilson, who would you point to as either a position group or a player that would also have a lot to prove in order to make this offense successful?
Well, it's funny. I guess you would have to go with the obvious here. I was trying to think of something else, but you'd have to go with the offensive line. I mean, you know, DK Metcalf has nothing to prove, and he should be better. And Tyler Lockett, same thing. I mean, he's got nothing to prove. Russell, frankly, doesn't have anything to prove. Chris Carson doesn't have anything to prove. I mean, I suppose the tight ends, that's a new look there, so you could look at them. But, you know, I think it's going to be a lot of the same guys. It's clearly going to be the offensive line. They were the subject of Russell's ire in the offseason. So there's just, I think it's as a with offensive linemen, it's not about an individual. It's about a group. And that group is, in my opinion, under the most pressure of any of them.
I would certainly agree with you, Graz, and we'll get back to this conversation. We'll highlight it here in an hour at 12:45 about the defense. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. We want to send you to the next Wednesday's Mariners game. Call 206-421-3776 or 866-979-3776 in 1 minute if you're listening on the radio or 30 seconds if you're on the video stream. Caller number 3 will win a pair of tickets to see the Mariners host Detroit on May 19th. We're giving away a pair of tickets every hour all day, so make sure you stay tuned to 710 ESPN for your next chance to win. We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners continue their series tonight against the Cleveland Indians. Chris Flexen will make will be making the start tonight. First pitch will be at 7:10 p.m. with the pregame show starting at 6 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. All right, one of the most respected voices in baseball reflects on the debut of Logan Gilbert and Jared Kelnick. Find out what they have to say next.